So I'll start by asking Mr. Higgs to read the Kingdom of Time to you. I think it's file 170, that's 24th of May, and his summary was filed back in June, so it's the same summary that we wrote to you.
Took you a moment, I haven't found it.
In the long term, that's 2048, additional commercial land demand for retail and non-retail commercial services and office activities is estimated at 89 hectares, with 63 hectares in Mokotipa Ward and 26 in Waikato. Commercial land demand supplied the provincial indicates overall a 17.3 hectare shortfall, with 16.1 estimated due from the Mokotipa Ward and 0.9 from Waikato. So that could potentially be neutral given the long-term time frame. But what's the reward? Putting my estimates into a different kind of time frame, the analysis indicates there is sufficient commercial land provision in the office of the board to meet projected commercial land demand requirements for the next 2028, and 2038 time frames. It is not until the longer 20 to 30 year time frame that additional commercial land might be required in this ward. Vacant commercial supply of 46.9 hectares was not estimated to be sufficient to accommodate its estimated commercial land demand by 2048, resulting in an estimated shortfall of 15 hectares. This represents 93% of the district's estimated commercial land shortfall and highlights here spatially that additional commercial land supply is likely to be required by 2048. This 16.1 hectare shortfall equates to 17% of current commercial land supply in the Waikato Ward. However, as noted above, it is not until the longer term 20 to 30 year time frame that additional commercial land might be required in the ward, and does not estimate to be required in the life of the current district land in North Wellington. The Waikato Ward. I appreciate this hearing is not based on the Waikato Ward, however, it would have been inappropriate to evaluate. So it would have been an appropriate level of the Waikato Ward in isolation from the wider district. For Waikato, I've estimated 25.1 hectares of vacant zoned land available to be utilised for commercial land provision. When assessed against the Ward's commercial land demand profile of 26 hectares, this indicates an estimated 0.9 hectare residual shortfall. Such a small differential would not be realised until the end of the 2 year assessment period, and in practice represents a broad state of equilibrium with commercial land supply meeting the issue of commercial land demand, including the NPS budget. Any questions?
I just had one question I'll ask first. When you're saying there's a long-term shortfall of 16 hectares, how is that differentiated between retail offices and non-retail commercial?
I have split the zoning capacity to those areas because all of those lands depend on the zone. So it's not a shortfall for retail per se, or office per se, it's just looking at the cumulative demand profile of those land uses against where they were tested and can be located on the ground to see what the high level shortfall is. They haven't broken down into this area.
I've got a student's questions and half of them are because I want to learn. Oh. So, NPS really feels, where did the 15% safety margin come from? It has come out of modelling which demonstrated that was over time some factor that allowed for the risk to have to manage,
No, I think the genesis of it, I think, came back from when you have a position of market equilibrium where demand and supply is actually met, you can effectively grasp it all during the land cycle, which may make it unfeasible to develop. So they've got a buffer of 15% trying to keep land prices and available supply at a level, that's the minimum, at a level where they see the market can operate effectively and efficiently without any artificial stimulus that the mainland government are
available. Because it struck me that the 15 hectares was 17%. And that's not almost sounds poor by the buffer if you think about it over 30 years. So
right.
Managing over the 30 years,
yeah,
thinking about when is the right time to release more land,
yeah,
then you're always going to be, every time you do the model, you're adding another 15%, whatever the space is.
Yes.
So you're calibrated, I get that.
If you build one of the good things, you don't want to get to a situation where your current demand can't supply a
people.
A on,
Okay, that's good, thank you. Table 3, I would like to go through the zones, please, because I'm a bit worried. I think some things we've got in the basement column or here in the office side, but I'm going to be through the table 3. Sorry, I'm in your the table was all the zones.
Oh,
right. So the yes. The business mixed use zone, the first one they get to use the I just need to be clear about that one. That's in Gorge Road, isn't it? That's
yeah.
And the 12.8, I understood some of that was going to be special housing area. And the special housing area has been used there. Mr. Steve, can you help with that? Because I was just checking whether the decision, whether what sort of land that 12.8 is used for. Now, I've got a map. I could be wrong. I'm just checking my local knowledge on that. I think that's the only area of business mixed use, isn't it? I want to come back to the way residential is putting out the shopping. I just want to know, first of all, what's in each category.
Yeah. So, my understanding of the special housing area wasn't notified initially, so I think they'll be incorporating that.
It will be.
So there was the need for the cap to come out to apply to the site to
the site. Okay, so 12.8 minus whatever the cap change. Okay,
12.8 minus 12.8. I think it's too complicated because what is the high school zone for business use? That's part of the problem as well, and it's actually a large area.
And so we're taking down to the commercial land in this table.
So
the
zone
is just
mixed
use. Okay, so that's actually not available until further notice, until they move out. Okay, but it will come though, won't it?
Yeah.
Okay. One of them now is not worried. The third hill one is, I know it's going to be 1,000 square metres, it's in the basement. I thought that was awesome. I thought that had shot from it. And same with Sunshine Bay, and we found a station, and same with Frankston.
Frankston
is a station, isn't it?
Yeah, I did a legal provider by the name of the council. I assume that should be occupied because of the effect.
It
relates to the one on the corner.
Yeah, because it's a big one. So, but three of those, I think, might need to be in the office
place. Yeah. I've had all these ground through by a tenant in the ground. So, I would say that given the small quantum of land, it's not going to make material difference to. We have ground at each of the nearest towns.
Check those three. Hanson Road, that's number one Hanson Road.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask about this one, but it also, because residential centres are permitted and local shopping centres done, The council has recently granted consent for a residential development on 1 Hampton Road. And it may or may not happen, of course, because the consent is so fresh, there's so much trouble with the salt. What are the factors that influence the decision making of the landowner and the developer to choose between residential and retail or commercial when they've got an option in something like a local shopping centre?
Oh, yes.
What makes them do it?
Right, one of the things, what the council should have been doing, right? What the site owes them in terms of what they paid for the site, how long they had it, and with what they first triple was in a different thing. The level of competition surrounding the tenant, around the particular site, profile, accessibility, for example, the local shopping centre, direct accessibility of the road is really important, it's crucial.
Would you say at 1 Hampton Road that that wasn't available? It's sort of an odd position relative to the people around about, but you can go around in the Hampton Road.
Yeah, yeah.
So leave them.
Even if you've got a checkered engineering position.
Yeah, today you want to think about me.
and also, my understanding of the relationship in the zone has changed, but they had their commercial on the ground level and they didn't do
it far.
Given the size of the zone and the demand for local shopping centre they had in the area, I don't think they could give up the whole zone cap rate commercial for local shopping centre. I think I had presented an evidence earlier on indicating that the local shopping centre zone should actually be shrunk to allow or enable within the zone residential to go to ground level to part of it. Because there wasn't enough demand from a local centre point of view to fill this entire zone at ground level with convenience activity, which is in the centre.
Yes, that was where I was going too. I think you've been anticipating that, because there has been requests for additional local shopping centre zone around the area council. And you're saying that there's no matter how much you need this.
Yeah, and also you've got to be careful about the size of the zone, because the local shopping centre zone policy and objectives are very clear in what they want that zone to fulfill. And 1 Hampton Road is a good example of the fact that the local shopping centre is a significant local shopping centre that goes broader than the demand of the local community. So, I think it could have created a tension with the actual perspective of the zone, and the tension of the zone, and the sense of that idea. So it's a very interesting thing to do.
Good. We should come back and check this one out. Then looking at here, with such a long period of time, trends in retail in particular, I noticed you factored into your model the mission extent, obviously. What do you see as being those trends in this district, roughly speaking?
In tourist towns like this, where you see the retail spend in the district is tourism. Long term projections and poor projections. And very critical. They can, to be honest, there's always a margin of error both up and down. I'm aware of tourist towns that have been hot to trot for 10 years and then fall away, like Tahoe in California. And tourist towns that, like Queensland has really, which has just flown ahead of projection over the last sort of 20 years or so. The trend here, a little bit easier, is land supply is tightened, it's not these countries to manage and finish, start losing the whole winter. And so you've got a lot more competition for zone land between different land uses. So I think you'll see a more some of the bigger retailers looking at more smaller footprint opportunities here. We start to see that where land is tight in Auckland, for example, in the supermarket sector. We're getting 1.5 hectares to build a 4,500 shop down along the supermarket. It's hard to find these days. And human impact doesn't quite differ to the climate change as well. So those, for example, food sectors that will get the small sort of, you know, down 1,500 plus, should make them critical, critical. And you know, the
noshes
and the ones that you don't agree with them. It's like specialized food retailers that have a higher price point, but they provide more than experience,
And then I'm back on page 3 in the residence, which is going down to the special zone, because that leads nicely into what Christian and I had about Remarkable Park and one other, Franklin Flats, which seem to be the two main sources of future reclaimed commercial land. And we observe this pattern in residential and Christian of form itself, that in fact, when you look at what appears to be an abundant supply, it's held tightly by two people. Is that a market?
It's a couple of ideas. One is probably not ideal, not perfect, but given the location of those areas and those zones, it would sit well with the future growth of the area. So they're well located to provide efficient supply. I would add to that, it's not all the same thing, we've got the potential for the current opportunity here as well.
Oh, yeah.
So you've got sort of three big blocks of all of that. Yes. That sort of may end up having quite a distinct role and function in the market. The town centre here has got a very strong tourist focus. And sort of scale the future, I see that sort of being maintained and enhanced. Whereas the Franklin Flat and the Master's Park offer is really built around servicing the growing population in more of a localised market. But also, the Remarkable Park itself has a lot of tourism opportunities that I think I wanted to pursue. But I'll tend to that market as well. But I think they are more like a function of meeting the local market and the local community needs.
Okay, that's good. Ask as much of my questions. Oh, and when you're looking at the table in your evidence, and she's just like the that point one too. That point says it's got checked out on screen because of occupied.
It seems to be an indication that you don't need to do anything more for quite a long time. And we've had a process for once we get to that time, it's all turned into residential or rural residential or something else and not available anymore. It's thinking about or reading
this. This other scheme, this land is utilised for the regional initiative and not for activity. They've been in that land blocked through other land uses within the rest of the again, somewhere else, and it could be the trigger to
look at the... I'm thinking about when you get to that. Towards that 2048 period, and hello, we're coming towards the land, but it's sort of really hard to find them. It's all been used for something else.
Yeah.
So that's an argument people use to justify moving earlier.
I'm just very careful with that because of the perspective of nature when you're looking at 2 year time frame.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going to happen to the evil in the district? Is it going to be where it is? Is it going to move? All those issues are going to play out still. And if something like that were to change or relocate, that's a seismic shock to the local economy and the way that it can function and operate. And we demand to be generated. And if, for example, we move to Wanaka and Keisha, then that will change the demand profile of the district quite significantly. So, you've got to be a little bit careful about providing for future year demand now, because it does also send the signals to the market of what's the point of investing in your zones, your current zones, if the council is going to potentially undermine that effect by regaining more land based on a future stretch of the time frame of 30 years. You've got plenty of time in the intervening years for a couple of different plan files to go through and actually do plan change variations along the way. It's just something untoward would happen and the situation arose for more demand for those land. But I understand the longer term for infrastructure perhaps, but not so much rezoning land that is not ready to be required for 30 years. That's going to undermine investment and the really the basic priority have. I think it could lead to a redistribution of activity geospatially, which wasn't anticipated within the first year. So I think, you've got these zones. Zone potential currently at in play, it's enough capacity to meet the potential so the years. You've got time.
What I've seen comment about the airport is come up so often in these hearings, and it seems to me that it is the big test point, I think. If it's something you can't be done about, then all these growth is talking about, maybe it's better than
others. Well, it may not be the relocation, it could be actually under that extended or it's limited with what the size of the plane that can come here.
I know.
So the runway extended coming up and how in that location can you get rid of jets, and that's why not only from East to Australia but from Asia or something like that. It's the same argument or same discussion if they won't need working. But if you get bigger brains in there, they can fly further, it's going to be massive important to the local economy. If you can't, then they may want to look at other options. So, it's all skipped at the very at the moment.
At paragraph 29 of my summary, the most of the 709 seeks to have a site rotation to require the rezoning so as to be entirely LDR. I can't LDR I'm opposed to this, so I consider that the site provides considerable amenity to residential development in its vicinity. Paragraph 30, submissions 349 and 716 seek the rezoning on an area of land in North Barker's Point Road and the west of the Moonlight Terrace subdivision. I consider that the rezoning of this land for either residential or visitor accommodation services would be acceptable to an intact extent. Submission 527 and 494 request the extension of the low density residential zone on the hillock which forms the southern end of the Arms Point Peninsula. Following consideration of their evidence, I reduce the area of possible rezoning of item support from that originally indicated in my written commentary. Submission 450 requests high density residential zoning over an area of land currently zoned low density residential and which is immediately adjacent to the LNL of Mount Fuhrer. I consider that this is acceptable. Submission 642 and 495 request extensions to the rural visitor zone. I support this in as far as it makes the boundary of the zone more coherent from the landscape perspective than the current boundary is. No, that is the area sort of, if you're looking at the map of the point, the area is sort of like southeast. I'm just trying to double check that it's not something that I saw before I appeared on it, rather than
you could produce a really nice illustration showing exactly what was going on. I think that photo in my house, that it was mainly to
be very dry. I don't recall anything at the moment.
I just want to know how serious it's the artist and you may have not seen it.
And if I have, so one of the streets of the last month, the different settlery, especially at Harper Point, in the area that you're recommending remain rural, what do you foresee happening in that? What applications can the council expect to receive for that land? Given that your experience in seeing applications in rural land and district and subject is discretionary at the moment and lot size and building platform is discretionary activity, what could you expect from that land?
The limit that I consider to be appropriate for our boundary is getting close to the summit of the ridge line, accessing the block on the summit of the ridge line. The land on the other side that remains rural is south of Fraser. So it's going to be Fraser, Colgar, whatever, and also view of the river probably. But it's not a particularly attractive development proposition in my opinion.
I know a particularly bad site in that respect, the middle of the road at the top. It's kind of conceived order. But doesn't seem to stop people buying properties like that in this district.
That's true.
So it's not going to remain 15, is it?
Well, it's probably 15 now.
Mm-hmm. No. Right. Okay. I didn't have any other questions.
With regard to Jack's point, the 11715 approved your operation of the extension of Jack's point currently Bay Zone over land located between the Lake and State Highway 6. In the main, I support the alterations proposed within the existing zone area, and I support a small part of the proposed extension of the zone. With regard to the 3 points I'd like to make, if I may, before I carry on. One is that subsequent to further visits to the site, I think that I have overstated the effect on the views of the lake from State Highway 6 in my above residence. And this is because the lake is more visible from the southern half of the property, significantly more visible from the southern half of the property than the northern. So I'm not responding to one of the 50 visual simulations that I have seen that he has presented in the interim. I'm responding to my observations of the amount of the extent of use for the rain that are actually possible at the moment.
It's
a joint statement made by the Marion Reed Reed Landscape on behalf of the QLBC, and it is that Chuck Hooker McDonald and Associates on behalf of the Guardian Family Trust demand the station of the Homeland Security on the 29th of August 2017, the Eddies and I walked the boundary of the INO of Jack's Point Hill on the Guardian land. We mapped this boundary by hand using large-scale aerial photos on which it was possible to identify the landscape features we were able to see on the ground. I'm afraid none of us are getting Mariah's technology complemented up the lead and up top range as we were at the other side of that point. I drew the boundary in the location on which we agreed. These aerials were then scanned with the technical security office due to the zip code and map. And this map is attached to the statement. Unexpectedly, we found that the boundary transgressed the proposed boundary of the amended OSR activity area in a number of locations. These boundaries have been tweaked so that this no longer occurs. I understand that because of the inclusion of areas between the notified OSR boundary and the corrected ONL boundary into the OSR, that area remains approximately the same as the amended area. I think Mr. Getty did have someone calculate that it was about 2,000 square metres deeper than the amended proposed amended area. The caption on the screen identifying the area of OSR has not been updated to reflect the amended submission. And when I say that, I'm saying it still says the proposed OSR is 10.4 hectares, whereas I believe it was reduced to approximately 10 hectares. 12 hectares and 10 blocks. Now, just to explain, because it probably isn't as there. The dotted black line is the ONL boundary that we can see, and where the yellow line is underlies it, that is now the proposed boundary of the OSR. Okay, so the fine dotted line, dotted black line,
yes.
That's the new ONL boundary, or the third ONL boundary. And where it's underlined by yellow line, that's where the OSR boundary has been tweaked. So that it's sort of an unders and overs exercise, so there's lots of them in some places, and we're going to the numbers. Which are a really striking feature of the site. the gentle slope, which could facilitate maintaining some of the buildings down the lake and the road, but also I mean, the current design will deny the relevance of the site used for the lake, whereas that is a part of the charm of that site, but it has the potential to exploit it.
Which aspect of the current design is that and will deny the residents?
Sorry?
Which aspect of the current design will
the mounting and planting.
Yeah.
Because Mr. Espy's illustration showing the height of the proposed mound is very helpful, but what it doesn't include is the fact that the intention to plant on one of those mounds, which will add up to another 15 metres of vegetation eventually, which will alter, have a much more magnified effect than the mounding on its own. I think I've said this in my email, what is proposed at the moment in areas A, B and C is basically digging a hole in the ground and putting a hole in the house. I mean, that's quite very crazy, but...
I wasn't confused, and it's probably only my lack of understanding of the site, so you can deal with things. The mounds are to, well, basically to ensure development from the highway.
Yes.
So the residential development is between the mounds and the lake.
It's between the mounds or the mounds, really.
It's between two sets of mounds.
Between two sets of
mounds. Where was the second set?
And then there's a further development along the lake.
Yeah.
Which is on 2 feet
anyway.
Yeah. The true parallel of these mountains, so the development in between them.
Follows on if you want to take this logic there. one that has the previous one.
Yeah.
And the previous is the assembly.
So I'll ask if I've got a very good summary. I'm in your hands, but it might be more difficult to ask about the generation update summary if you don't have any other questions that flow from it.
You should be watching.
Good morning, Commissioner. Mayor, I'm going to make District Council and next hearing relates to landscape matters in relation to the location of the outstanding natural landscape boundaries on the northwest side of Remarkable Range and the landfill steps of a rezoning request on the northern side of Remarkable Inclusion Range. Firstly, submissions 710 and 409. The submitted seek relocation of the boundary of the Remarkable ONL between the Kawera River and the quarry on the eastern side of the Kingston Road at State Highway 6 to further up the mountain slope. In the case of submission 409, a boundary consistent with a former order from the Environment Court, the details there is sought. North of the Remarkable Skinfield Road, I support the relief sought in part and have recommended a relocation of the ONL boundary to follow a fence line that demarcates the change in landscape character between the cultivated valley and the more natural, steeper alluvial fan slopes, and also to exclude a dwelling and curtilage at 274, I think, rather than 27. South of the Remarkable Skinfield Road, I support the relief sought in full and consider that the ONL boundary is appropriately located as shown on the map attached to the court order. And then turning to the Queensland Park Special Zone sought by Senator Adrian Fitz. On the northern slopes of the Remarkables and Ben Cruickham and along the Kawera River, Queenstown Park Limited seeks rezoning of approximately 2,000 hectares of land from the notified rural zone to a Queenstown Park special zone. This zone would facilitate development of a gondola between Remarkables Park and the Remarkable Key Field, as well as tourism and residential development on the sands and surface adjacent to the Kawera River and associated access bridges and jetties. Changes to the ONL boundaries in this area are no longer sought, and it is therefore now agreed that the rezoning is within the Remarkable ONL. This landscape is one of the most memorable and expressive landscapes in the Queenstown area and has important ecological, scenic and cultural values and a high level of natural character. Of sands, terraces and floodplains within the South Park Station have a lower level of natural character than the mountain slopes above. I consider that they are perceived as integral and legible components of the mountains or of the Kawera River. Subsequent to filing my rebuttal evidence, I participated in expert witness questioning with Mr. Stephen Brown and Ms. Rebecca Skidmore on the 22nd of August. Mr. Robert Buxton also attended this meeting, but the joint witness statement submitted to the panel only includes matters discussed by the three landscape witnesses. I have read supplementary evidence submitted around the 29th from the following witnesses, Ms. Rebecca Skidmore, Mr. Stephen Brown, Mr. Tim Johnson and Mr. David Sargent. Firstly, I'd just like to make one amendment to my rebuttal evidence. The second and third sentences of paragraph 4.21. So I've added some additional words there, and these should read, these are effects related to physical modifications of the landscape and changes to the landscape elements and attributes that make up its character, as well as to human perception. They are not only dependent on whether or not the changes are visible. just returning to the changes in the supplementary evidence submitted last week. The proposed provisions for design have been amended as shown in the track changes version in Appendix A of Mr. Sargent's supplementary evidence. Among the amendments are changes to the matters of control for glamping and for buildings in the rural residential areas, and the matters of discretion for comprehensive development plans and subdivision in the rural residential and rural visitor activity areas. In my view, these changes would allow objective 44.2.1b, which was a landscape focused objective, and the associated policies to be more effectively implemented. In paragraph 3.2 of your supplementary evidence, Ms. Skidmore recommends that notes be added to the matters of discretion subdivision directly referencing the zone objectives and policies. I agree that including specific reference to these objectives and policies would better ensure that the outcomes envisaged for the zone were implemented in the subdivision activities. I note, however, that Mr. Buxton and his members summary considers that the wording of the objectives and policies are too broad to be simply inserted as matters of discretion. At the expert caucusing, it was agreed between the landscape witnesses that the matters of discretion for commercial recreation activity building at rule 44.4.16 should include location. The amended provisions in Mr. Sargent's evidence do not include location as a matter of discretion for this rule. And I remain of the view that the activity status for glamping should allow for a distinct application each time in the event that there are no remaining appropriate locations for glamping development within the zone. The amended visual simulations attached to Mr. Johnson's supplementary evidence show that the use of an accurate size for the gondola cabin slightly increases the visibility of a potential gondola from some viewpoints as compared with his original visual simulation. These include viewpoints where the gondola is viewed above the ridge line of the near mountain slope, for example in Lake Hayes Estate Playground and at Judge and Jury Drive in Lake Hayes. Or alternatively, it's visible as a vertical rather than diagonal line across the mountain slope, for example, from the Lake Hayes walkway at the northern end of Lake Hayes. My comments in paragraph 4.13 of my rebuttal evidence about the limitations of the visual simulation still apply to these updated simulations, and I understand that Mr. Brown has taken these factors into account when assessing the gondola system's visibility. The amended visual simulations have not changed my assessment of the overall visibility of the gondola system, which is set out in paragraph 4.5 and 4.6 of the Joint Witness Statement, except in relation to distant viewpoints like the Lake Hayes walkway, where a vertical line of closely spaced gondola cabins could be clearly perceived in some light conditions. In these conditions, the overall visibility could be moderate rather than low. As set out in the Joint Witness Statement, I consider the overall visibility of the gondola to be high from parts of the Twin Rivers Trail on Morgan Hill. Although cabins moving on the slope could be visually absorbed to some extent by the complex background vegetation cabins, both the lower and upper gondola vent stations would be clearly visible, with the upper station breaking the skyline. I remain of the opinion that the capacity for the gondola corridor would have a low level of adverse effect on perceived naturalness, coherence, and scenic values of the ONL from many different viewpoints within the Washington Basin. Where the system is potentially visible from distant viewpoints as a vertical line up the mountain slope, I consider it would have moderate adverse effects on visual images, and in combination with the existing ski field roads would result in cumulative adverse effects on the perceived naturalness of the ONL. I'm unsure whether this effect would be confined to people at the northern end of Lake Hayes or whether it would also be experienced from other public and private places, and I'm therefore unable to determine the magnitude of Senator's effect. In my opinion, a visible gondola system was significantly detract from the perceived naturalness and aesthetic coherence of the landscape when viewed by closer observers in Lake Hayes Estate and along the Kawerau River. In relation to the visibility of residential and visitor accommodation development enabled by the zone, the agreed areas of visibility are set out in paragraph 4.8 of the Joint Witness Statement. In addition to these, developments within the rural visitor tree area and rural residential too would be visible from the Crown Range Road zigzag lookout at a distance of about 5.5 to 6 kilometres. And you could probably see that in the photograph on page 22 of my evidence and sheet that was taken from the Crown Range. Look out at the top of the zigzag. So it's in the distance, but the lake of the scan is visible from the slopes of the remarkable and northern hill right here.
And we call that photograph 5?
Photograph
5 or photograph
5? Photograph 5. Yeah, photograph 6 is from the fire lookout on the Crown Range Road, but photograph 5. So you can see some lines, dark lines of evergreen conifers, and then just behind them is the western sand. This visible development would only constitute a small part of an expansive view. However, in my opinion, the development areas would still be perceived as nodes of dense development from this lookout and the higher one on the Crown Range Road, and would appear as sporadic nodes of development within the Kawerau River corridor. In paragraph, sorry, this should be 4.4, 4.15, and 4.24, I would say. I discussed the potential visibility of development within the zone from closer public places, including the Twin Rivers Trail below and east of Lake Hayes Estate, and State Highway 6 on Lady's Mile. In Appendix A, I've included additional photographs taken from these locations, and I apologise for these. It was actually snowing when I went on to the trip, and the mountains were shrouded in snow, so I apologise for those. But they do show the extent of visibility of the Vastus Dern Stan and the proposed gondola route above the sand. The first photograph one is taken from the Council Recreation Reserve at the base just below Ride South Farm, where the road comes down. And photograph two is taken from the trail adjacent to the Kawerau River, looking up to the edge of the rural visitor tree area. Photograph 3 is from just by Bill's Bridge, which crosses Lake Hayes, crosses Hayes Creek on the Twin Rivers Trail, and from that point of view you can just see one end of RV3, the upper terrace here. Next, photograph 4 is from higher up on the Twin Rivers Trail as you're ascending Morgan Hill. And from this point of view, you have an elevated view of the upper and lower terraces of the rest of the sand. From further along in photograph 5 and higher up, just a more elevated view and raw coat from this area, and from further east, have a good view of the rural residential 2 area. Photograph 6 is a view taken from the pedestrian cycle trail on the northern side of State Highway 6 at Lakehead Street. This is a winter view, so during summer there is less visibility, but it shows that the upper terrace of the rest of Burn Sand is clearly visible from that point. The next photograph is on the southern side of State Highway 6. There's a trail connection that comes up from Lakehead Estate at that point, and then people cross over State Highway 6 to go on to Lakehead Trail from that point. Here, the photographs confirm that the Millbush Tree area and the gondola route would be highly visible from the Twin Rivers Trail at a distance of 250,000 metres. These proposed development areas should also be clearly visible to pedestrians and cyclists using the trail porch connection to Lake Hayes. Welcome to the recent amendment to the proposed zone planning provisions increase the likelihood that the objectives and policies of the zone might be implemented. I remain of the view that the OML is not able to absorb development of the scale and nature proposed. The alluvial sands and terraces of Owens Creek and Rastus Burn are integral and legible elements in the landscape sequence from mountain peak to river, and are prominent in public views. They form important components of the landscape character and amenity. Despite the changes to the planning provisions and the corrections to the development for physical areas, I still consider that development within the activity areas would obscure the legibility of the sands and terraces and would result in a high level of adverse effect on the natural character of the O&L and on rural character. If the building coverage and building height limits proposed for rural visitor tree area were implemented in full, I'm still of the view that this development would appear as an urban node within the landscape. Aspects of potential development are located within the Carborough River margin limits that were agreed between the landscape witnesses at expert caucusing. These include the gondola route as it crosses the river, the potential gondola station on the true left bank below Lakehead Estate, and any associated additional car park areas that were developed here. The rural visitor development was in rural visitor 4 below the Owens Creek Sand, and any bridges, jetties or wharves. Taken together with existing bulk modifications within the margins, these aspects of the zone would, in my view, result in moderate to high cumulative adverse effects on the natural character of the river margins. In conclusion, I consider that development enabled by the updated zone is likely to significantly degrade the landscape quality, landscape character and visual amenity of the O&L. The cumulative adverse effects of anticipated development when combined with existing ski field access road and modifications along the Carlisle River would, in my opinion, exceed the capacity of the landscape to absorb change. This is not to say that a lesser scale and extent or a different type of development might not be appropriate. I've noted in my evidence that I consider the following element could be absorbed without degradation of the landscape character and values, and those are walking trails, appropriately located and designed mountain bike track, one additional pedestrian bridge and one jetty or landing on the Carborough River, and the Blanton site in the Upper Orange Creek catchment. I also consider that a limited amount of additional development could be appropriate where topography and vegetation facilitate absorption of buildings and associated activities. The landscape and visual effects of any such development would depend on the specific details of each proposal. Given the outstanding natural values of the remarkable and the Carborough River O&L, and the extent of visibility of the development that is enabled by the zone, it was my view that the Queenstown Park Special Zone would not be consistent with the landscape related objectives and policies in chapters 3 and 6 of the PDP. In particular, the subzone would not protect a highly valued Oriel from inappropriate subdivision due to development. While I consider the landscape with some capacity to absorb change, the scale of development proposed exceeds such capacity. I also consider the development within rural visitor 3 would not be consistent with objective 3.2.2.1 of the PDP, as it is not likely to protect the district's rural landscape from sporadic urban development.
I'm the author of the group to rural residents and rebuttal for Queensland Lakes District Council. This summary updates the summary of my evidence regarding submissions by Queensland Park Limited and the Napoli Park Limited in response to the supplementary evidence of Mr. David Sargent, Mr. David Seymour, Stephen Brown, and Mr. Tim Johnson, received on the 29th of August, and the record of conferencing of the landscape witnesses, paragraph 3, 7 below, originally appeared in paragraph 28, the future story of my summary dated 25th of July 2017. From paragraph 8 onwards, I provide my response to the supplementary evidence and the conferencing. As noted in Mr. Sargent's supplementary evidence, a lot of formal conferencing between Mr. Sargent and myself was changed for the 22nd of August, which did not appear due to circumstances outlined by Mr. Sargent. Also, given the limited time frame since receiving the supplementary evidence, this updated summary places on my general conclusion. We could wonder whether to read paragraph 3 to 7. Queensland Park Limited and the Michael Park Limited have requested a specific Queensland Park special zone for the Queensland Station, rural Queensland Station, provided for rural residential and visitor accommodation, a gondola linking the Franklin Flats with a remarkable ski field, walking, cycling track, commercial recreation, and greater protection of the SMAs within the zone. I consider that the primary concern is the landscape effect on one of the most prominent ORLs in the district. It extends from the Kalawao River, which is identified on the Otago Regional Plan Water as having outstanding value and has a water conservation order, through to the mountain tops. Based on the evidence of Smith Northrop, I consider that the proposal would not be appropriate. Relating with the significant economic benefits in the proposing, I consider the rural zone provision as recommended in Council's right to apply to hearing 11 do provide for consideration of a gondola or passenger lift service and the restricted discretionary activity while providing appropriate protection of the ONL. Also, I consider that the strategic chapter of the PGP can be summarised as directing that diversification of land classified as ONL and tourism or residential activity should only occur at scale and in a location where the landscape value, including the natural characteristics, lakes and rivers in the margin, are sustained or not degraded. I consider the rural zone the most appropriate for achieving strategic chapters and therefore the purpose of the ONA. In terms of proposed rules, many of the activities are proposed to be controlled activities or restricted discretionary activities with limited scope to decline, and these activities are to be exempt from notification consideration. However, I consider that given the importance of the landscape and the detailed understanding of effects that come with the legal consent process, that there should be the ability to decline the proposal and that the general check for notification should apply. I also have noted in my rebuttal evidence that I have concerns about the wording of the proposed rules, including the violation of rules 447, the 44.4.7 and 44.48.
a considerable element of environmental compensation in the proposal. It appears that by providing for activities that will have adverse effects on the RML, other activities such as public walking, biking tracks, and better protection of the SNA will be achieved. The solicitor also appears to suggest that by undertaking non-farming activities on the more productive areas of the farm, this avoids the environmental damage that would occur if these productive areas were intensively farmed. I consider such environmental benefits should be able to be achieved without having to compromise nationally important landscape value. I consider the values of the Calgary River as a rather soft river. The effects of the gondola, access road, jetty and bridges on the character of the river have not, in my view, been fully considered by QPL experts. It also appears to be very little assessment of the location of the jetty and the bridges in the zone in terms of the effect on the character of the Kalawao River. As discussed at the hearing on 25th of July, I note that the term environmental compensation used in paragraph 6 above is not quite the right term, given that public walking, cycling tracks could be best described as community benefit and could create adverse environmental effects. In terms of the proposed zone purpose, objectives and policy, I note that in the latest reading there is still little emphasis on the ORL and no mention of the values of the Kalawao River. I'm also concerned about the inclusion of policy 44.2.3.2, as the term non-farming is very wide and the policy refers to enabling such activities. It is not quite clear why this policy is specified to the specifics of the permitted land. And I would be concerned if this policy was to be applied in any zone that contains SNA already group or where beside a winter body. Having considered the latest version of the provision, I note that activity 44.4.19.3.2.21 provide non-compliant activity status for forests, forestry, factory farming and industrial activity. I see that all other activities not provided for in the activity table are covered by Rule 44.4.1 as discretionary activities. For example, premises licensed for the sale of liquor that are not within RBAA and a strict. Activities outside the activity areas would be classed as discretionary activities if they reach forestry, forest sector farming or industrial activity. I consider that this general rule, along with new policy 44.2.3.2, would not be appropriate within an ORL, and the default state should be non-compliant, which would reflect that rural zone. I consider the changes to the suggested rule result in a set of proposed provisions that are complex and confusing. The rules referring to a trail plan, rules 44.7 and 44.8, have been deleted, and part of these provisions have been inserted into the second part of a rather complex rule 44.4.9.2. Using wording that appears to be based on a comprehensive development plan rule, in reply for chapter 41, chapter 1.1. I should have been right to reply to chapter 41. However, the first part of rule 44.4.1.2, which did appear to be based on chapter 20, now refers to a new rule 44.4.8 for comprehensive development activity. I'm not certain of the variety of this rule, given that it refers to in accordance with legal consent having been granted under Rule 44.8. I'm also not certain about the variety of the amended rule. And plus, but also standard 44.5.4 for the rule for this activity here in court. And 44 even standard I'm talking about here, 44.5.5.3 for similar reasons. The issue of inquiry will need to be addressed by council on the council's right of reply.
do not fear that Rule 44.4.8, where the comprehensive development activities are limited to the activities listed in A through G. I consider they are not, particularly given the methods of expression which include distribution of additional sites and location of new proposed commercial and community activities. I'm also unsure what distribution of additional height is referring to, but assume it relates to standards 44.5.4 for Rural Act Deliberate Activity Area 4 and 44.5.3 measured in paragraph 10 above. I do not see the need for new Rule 44.4.8A. I would consider any amendment or replacement to a comprehensive development activity consent would be covered by Rule 44.4.8. However, to remove any uncertainty, I consider the rule should be amended. 44.4.8 should be amended to read comprehensive development activity in brackets and amendments to approve comprehensive development activity consent for rural business activity areas and rural residential activity area 3. I also note that the first part of Rule 44.4.92 has inserted words excluding buildings, which would mean that a building in the RVAA under Rule 44.4.91 could be built as a controlled activity without being accompanied by any comprehensive development application. The same concern would apply to buildings within R3 and under Rule 44.4.1A. I note that amended standard 44.5.9, which refers to gondolas outside the gondola corridor, cannot apply to the rule, as the rule 44.4.12 is limited to gondola passenger lift services within the corridor. You could have a standard for a rule that is for an activity within a corridor, to have standards outside the corridor. Some of my other concerns regarding the rules listed in paragraph 3.24 of my supplementary rebuttal agenda do not appear to have been addressed, particularly points A, C, D, and H. In terms of earthworks, it's rather concerned raised in the record of conference in the Black Cat Witnesses, paragraph 29, regarding the mountain bike trail. I note the Landsat Witnesses refer to the earthwork rules in the operative district plan at the time. Given that, as I can see, no reason why earthworks in the proposed zone should be treated any differently to earthworks within any other OML, I consider the earthworks rules in standard within the proposed zone, noting that standard 44.5.6 does not have an associated rule in Table 1, the patient is deleted. Earthworks rules. I understand that earthworks can be dealt with under the operative district plan until such time as new earthworks. I also note that Rule 44.4.3 regarding commercial recreational activity does not have any associated standards, unlike the rural zone. And given the concerns of the Landsat Witnesses regarding mountain bike trails, I consider the standards from the rural zone should be applied. These are standards such as maximum 12 people. Regarding the listing of objectives available by the methods of discretion in Rule 44.48, 1.2.3 and 17, although I understand the intent in terms of assessing such activities, happens that the objectives and policies referenced are not specific enough to enable clear understanding of what the method of discretion would be, or on what basis the decision maker might impose conditions or alternatively decline to grant consent. Mr. Sargent, in paragraph 3.3 of his supplementary evidence, has provided a useful overview of the provisions and how they interrelate. I just thought it would be useful for Mr. Sargent to read out the possible permutations of development that could occur based on the restrictions that ensure elements of the development occur or do not occur, and the policy backing for those restrictions. For example, it would be useful to understand how what could potentially be developed, i.e. without a bond. It appears that commercial and community activities would be non-compliant, but residential and visitor accommodation could still provide the form. B. Without providing a public trail under the trail plan, it appears that all commercial, community, residential and visitor accommodation would be a non-compliant activity, but not in accordance with the trail plan. But it is not clear that a trail is required to be constructed. This is meant to be in accordance with the trail plan. C. Without upgrading the Boyd Road State Highway intersection, it appears that residential and visitor accommodation is non-compliant activity, but commercial and community activities are still provided for. D. Without extending the public trail to RBAA4, it appears that more than 6 dwellings in RRAA 3, 4, 5 and 6 would be a non-compliant activity, but that 20 dwellings could be built at RR2. E. Without reducing the stocking rate above 600 metres above sea level or limiting grazing in the SNA, noting it could be used right to fly, there does not appear to be any restriction on any other activities. And finally, whether the provisions restrict the remainder of the farm from being intensified. Well, I got the sergeant at paragraph 4.1 and 4.2 correctly notes that the water conservation order does not contain provisions for making water bodies over in upstream natural feature. The Otago Regional Plan Water does include in table Schedule 1A, Schedule of Natural Values, a reference to the outstanding characteristics of the Carlisle and the conservation water under the column titled Outstanding Natural Feature for a Landscape. However, I consider the important issue is that all of the water conservation water characteristics of the Carlisle River, including wild and scenic characteristics, natural characteristics, and recreational purposes are taken into account when assessing the proposed zone. As noted above in paragraph 8, I consider the values of the Carlisle River appear to be given little emphasis by Queenstown Park Limited, including views from the river. I also note that the effect of the access road appears to be downplayed. The Skidmore states in paragraph 4.2 of her supplementary evidence, as the gondola will provide a primary transport connection to the zone, traffic generation and requirements for parking will be limited. Whereas Mr. Kenny, paragraph 49 of his evidence sheet, refers to 2,000 vehicle movements per day and an afternoon peak excess demand of 130 vehicles movements per hour. Regarding Mr. Sargent's comments about the public interest, paragraph 5.1 and 5.2, I consider the effects of a development such as this cannot be fully understood until scrutiny of large resource contingent application is undertaken. Given that both myself and Ms. Milford consider that the development enabled by the zone may have significant effect, I consider that if the zoning was to be provided, a public process for assessing those effects was warranted. While I accept that there has been a very low level of interest in with the Planning Commission, I consider the lack of detail, including a very limited plan with no key to identify the elements, the items shown on the plan did not assist in the understanding of the mission or the effects. My concerns, which were referred to Mr. Sargent in paragraph 6.1 and 6.5, is creating a precedent of twofold. First, in terms of the structure of the proposed district plan, I raise the concern that although zoning, a complete station can provide elements of integrated management for a station, It would not lead to efficient and effective preparation of a plan if every station was to have its own plan in order to achieve integrated management. Regarding my concern about lactating activity area within the ONL, which I do consider to consist of a nationally significant river as reflected by the water conservation order, connected to a nationally significant alpine landscape, given that the remarkable vision is considered to be a key focus within the wider landscape of Queenstown, that this is not a precedent matter. Rather, my concern is that the protection of ONL from what I consider to be increased when inappropriate development is kept at a rather low level. I do agree with the statement of Mr. Young's legal permission, paragraph 14.7, I do not agree with the statement of Mr. Young's legal permission, that if tourism-based development cannot occur here, it is difficult to see where it could occur. And councils should not sterilise large tracts of private land. I consider the rural zone and the outstanding natural landscape is not sterilising of development. As I stated in paragraph 3.7 of my Republic evidence, strategic chapters can be summarised as directing that diversification of property sacrificed in parallel into tourism or residential activity should only occur at a scale and in a location where the landscape value, including the natural character of lakes and rivers and their margins, are explained, not degraded. I consider that the scale and location of the actual activity area will not sustain the landscape value. Regarding the request by Mr. Young to remove the building restriction area from the submitted site, which is given of his legal permission, I note that this does not appear to have been included in the original submission. The building restriction area alignment has been carried over from the operative plan and appears to be associated with the water treatment designation 46, so it is not an error as such. Although further investigation is required under the purpose of this building restriction area, I consider that it appears that the area should be removed from the permitted land if there is scope to remove it. Overall, I continue to recommend that the rezoning be rejected.
Other witness.
Yeah,
all my books.
Thank you, Mr. Manchin. Most of your discussion, anything to do with the effects of built development, the buildings that are associated with the visitor areas and the accommodation and rural residential. Is that fair to say?
Well, I would say it's also, you know, includes the associated development, which is roads, maybe the plants and cartilage activity, there.
So what about the gondola system?
The gondola system, I consider
that. I mean, it's critical isolation. This was all that was being proposed. What would you view?
It was just the gondola there. I still consider that the gondola would have adverse effects on the natural character of the ONL and on its aesthetic coherence, particularly from a point of viewpoint. And that it would adversely affect the visual amenities and the close viewpoint. From that case, state and within the colour of that corridor, and also the recreational experience of people using the river corridor. Although, you know, some other development is visible from its province country and its located state, the majority of the river corridor is very isolated, tranquil, remote feeling. You're within that corridor and you see the mountains and the river and rural land on the effects and the
And it seems to me that apart from the conclusion that no change and flooding the country, there's a very wide tract of land on the south bank of the Kawarau River, really from Boyd Road to Shad Farm, which is purely rural and has a few rural buildings in it,
yes.
And nothing else up the river.
No.
Okay, now. Mr. Brown, for our city on views, he'd get you from more distant locations about what he describes as context, so that you're viewing, often viewing from those more distant locations, you're viewing the mountain building, that whole corridor on the south bank, across the north bank, if you like, and all the developments on the north bank.
Yes.
Okay. And I agree with Mr. Brown on this, because to me that the river corridor is actually a very wide system, quite a wide separation. And it just adding up to sort of diminish any contextual argument like this. Well, I'll ask Mr. Brown this question, so he's really good now. But,
yeah, well,
I have this idea too.
Yeah, I think I said from my evidence, that the development proposed on the sand is not contiguous with Lake Hayes Estate, it's for other development on the alluded or terrace. It's separated by the Kawarau River and by the floodplain on the northern side of the Kawarau River, and also by a couple of quite large roche mutinae, the knob that kind of between Lake Hayes and Short Oak Country and Morgan Hill. Perhaps from some viewpoints you might see development on the Rapids Burn Farm immediately above Lake Hayes Estate houses. So perhaps you might say, it might be difficult to distinguish that they were on the other side of the river, but I think that's only from a limited number of viewpoints.
Well, sort of the Ladies Mile area, it would have been.
Pardon?
Would that be the sort of Ladies Mile, St. Island area?
Possibly from Ladies Mile.
It's a great deal.
I think from Ladies Mile, you can still perceive that the development was further away on the other side, at the base of the mountain, not in Lake Hayes.
But it's sort of a bleak there, compared to, say, the Grand Lane Road, where you're
Yes.
And you see the separation more truly.
Yes, that's
right. Okay, that's what
a rural zone with an ODI or a special zone, are you actually saying that it would be better for, would it be possible for each of the elements in this development to occur as part of a separate consent or one consent under rural and ODI?
Well, it would be possible to share a flight,
You're saying it wouldn't succeed though, because you said there should be a different kind of development.
Yes.
What do you think is capable of it?
Well, possibly a resort, it's a small resort, given the government is established. It's all conjecture, isn't it?
Well,
it depends on what the application may be for.
both you and Bruce Nelson are saying something less might be possible.
Definitely.
I'm hoping to get a sense of what can be absorbed in the landscape and what so much should be consistent with the humanity maintaining the values of the knowing else in your mind.
Well, one point I would make too is that if you look at that, the station, the proposal intends to develop both of the sands leading into the Kawerau River. You know, why develop both with the given up the right standing landscape? Maybe you'd look at even keeping one in a natural state. If you're choosing where would you put development? I don't think you'd choose to put a development on each fan, maybe only on one, and leave the other in a natural state. Well, the other point I'd make too in terms of the station, the fans aren't the economy in terms of a lot of land closer to the river. And if the intention is to tuck away the river, I think the original commission talked about the river tucked away. Maybe you would look at the fans, maybe you look at another area, which we also talked about, how to do four, if possible. No, there would work for one area. Look, my RB4 is the lower. Not just the dwellings and the houses, but again, part of the development that might be able to be absorbed within the station, will have appreciated, I think, such as traffic along the road, the existing road, and what level of upgrade would you need to take on that road.
I don't recall seeing any of the comments in the dialogue on this message. I remember reading with Penny, but not in the sense of the visual effects of driving the road. Anyway, we'll say it's not here.
I don't know. Have you seen any evidence affecting the visual effects of road?
I think by the Kinmore Brown, the widening, the physical widening of the road, which might have a great effect because the little widening is required. That's my memory of her evidence on that.
And are you in disagreement with that conclusion?
If it was taken on its own, no, I don't think it would have significant effect. My concern is really that gets added to increased traffic along that road. I think the increased traffic would have a greater physical and landscape effect than the widening of the road itself.
Have you driven that road or been driven along?
Yes.
Quite so. Movement of vehicles visible from public places. As you see vehicles on Sheffield Road,
yes.
You can see vehicles going passing along there. And that
okay.
Will draw attention to the road.
Yes, it would. Yes, it indicates a greater level of activity and development on that side of the river.
In your overall assessment of this proposal, is it possible to separate the pull away the initial component from the rest of it. Would we even be thinking about rural residential on the south bank of the Kawerau River if it wasn't for the gondola and the
certainly not a theory of positive for a residential node. As you know, none of the rural residential would be doing the development that would be appropriate there. Certainly not a theory of positive.
Going on from that, the zoning package doesn't preclude rural residential development other parts of the zone anyway, does it? Any other parts of the zone other than the plots? I mean, the proposal for plots.
Yes,
it is. But it doesn't preclude other rural residential development.
Well, that would be a discretionary activity under the proposed rule, because the catch all is any of that that not provided for.
As for the existing rule, then?
I'm just trying to recall whether the rule is solely exclusive to the problem or not. I don't think it is. In fact, the catch all of discretionary activity would apply to a rural residential development outside the property. That'd be my understanding of the rule.
I'm thinking that we look at the existing rule, right?
Just on that point, Mr. Mills was talking about, in paragraph 9, at the very end, it says that the false status of the non-compliant is a fit for rural zone. Yes, no, it wasn't you, but could you explain what you mean there?
But I would recommend saying that when you apply that discretionary rule, when you consider that discretionary activity against that policy that says to enable non-rural activities that have been recently inserted into
it's the combination of those two things.
That's concerning, isn't it?
I did reading those, identify those three categories, I was a little shocked. I mean, I know it's implausible that they would be established here, but well, it's a case for a prohibition, isn't it? No, I'd be horrified if I thought there were even applications for a discretionary activity for such activities over there. Well, I acknowledge that it's probably quite enforceable, but that's even in such developer's mind. Cross-referencing objectives and policies into the assessment matrix. I mean, you don't have to do it anyway. They're applicable whether or not, aren't they?
That's correct. No, you do need to apply the relevant one.
Yeah.
Relevant to the matters that discretion is restricted to. That's correct. This was more concerned about just referring to the objective and policy as a matter of discretion.
Yeah.
The matter of discretion should be quite abstract and understood and should be focused on a particular effect.
Yeah.
And when the by using the word objective and policy as a matter of discretion as a trying to work out what matter discretion has been restricted to, I think it's quite difficult. Unless the policy and objectives are absolutely clear in terms of what it is.
So it would be difficult.
Well,
you're concerned about specificity of the objectives and policies, any objectives and policies anyway.
Well, think about them being new, the method of discretion should be quite discreet and quite clear and stringent in the particular step that's been dealt with. But I think the inclusion of objectives and policies of the method of discretion came about through the caucusing of the landscape experts. But I think the expectation there was it would be a matter, an assessment matter, not a matter of discretion.
Right.
And I think what would need to be done is to carefully look at the objective and policies and pull out the effect that you want to restrict discretion to rather than referring just blankly, broadly referring to the objective and policies as a matter of discretion. So identify the specific effect that discretion needs to be restricted to.
I think this could very well be quite fairly conceived that the development is going to be quite, I think it's going to be visible and prominent from anywhere, from the cycle and create walkway on the north bank.
Mm-hmm.
So what I need to understand is the significance of that area. You need to say, well, it's just that area, just not anywhere else, and so it's passage. Of the most importance, but just in its own right, how important is their view of this development from the length of that track? I walked it a couple of times from not every country to the deer farm, but to the other end of Northern. It's one of the more elevated portions, isn't it? The part of the mountain, on one side of all Morton Valley where it descends down to the flats and among the willows, and you can't see
the trees. Yeah, there's some part, I think the only part that isn't visible from anywhere on the track is probably a little bit more. All the other areas are visible at some stage as you're passing along that track. So it's the whole experience that you have during the track. As one, so you're aware of that development at a number of points along that track. So that affects your experience, that landscape, your perception of it, peanut values of intense wildness and remoteness.
There's a lot of users on that track, presumably in the summer.
Yes, but I don't know the number of
people. It's been quite a while,
yeah, but it's Greenaway has even gave some figures for the number of users of that track. I think it's becoming more popular. where people hire electric bikes and will do a long circuit, even if they're not hard out of mountain bikers, and keep walking track as well.
Which I believe to be 13th of September.
I've only got three things at the moment, so I won't be very long on that. And hopefully that will be very shortly after the hearing next week.
Okay, thank you very much for
the position that we're having for this. No. I just wonder what to do and what I'll write down in a few minutes.
Okay, thank you,
Mr.
Chair. That brings us to the end of the Council's evidence and case.
Thank you.